This morning we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 18, Text 46. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Dityuvacha.
Dityuvacha.
Ratam Brahman. Bruhi Karyani Vani Me. Nicha Hanisidani Navratam Gnananti Navratam Nanti Yanyuta Dityirvacha Darayishye Vratim Brahman. Tarayashe Ratam Brahman.
Tarayashe Ratam Brahman.
Bruhi Karyani Vani Me.
Bruhi
Karyani Vani Me. Yani Chehas Nishidhani. Navratam Nayante Yanyuta. Diti Uvacha. Diti said, Darayashye,
I shall accept
Vratam
Vow
Brahman, my dear Brahmana.
Bruhi,
please state Karyani.
Must be done.
Yani.
What?
Me.
To me.
Yani.
What?
Cha.
And.
Hiha.
Here.
Nisidani.
Is forbidden.
Na.
Not.
Vratam.
The vow,
grinanti,
break,
yani,
what,
uta,
also.
Translation,
Diti
replied, my dear Brahmana, I must accept your advice and follow the vow. Now let me understand what I have to do, what is forbidden, and what will not break the vow. Please clearly state all this to me. Srila Prabhupada's purport. As stated above, as stated above, a woman is generally inclined to serve her own purposes. Kashyapa Muni proposed to train Diti to fulfill her desires within 1 year. And since she was eager to kill Indra, she immediately agreed, saying, please let me know what is the vow. Please let me know the vow. Who is that speaking? Can you tell her to be quiet? Please let me know what the vow is and how I have to follow it. I promise that I shall do the needful and not break the vow. This is another side of a woman's psychology. Even though a woman is very fond of fulfilling her own plans, when someone instructs her, especially her husband, she innocently follows, and thus she can be trained for better purposes. By nature, a woman wants to be a follower of a man. Therefore, if the man is good, the woman can be trained for a good purpose.
Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadam Ayam Didati Svabhidantikam Vancha Kalpatubhyasya Kripasam Titananam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So in these verses, we have been reading some days now. There is a clear distinction between the psychological makeup of men and women, that women have their needs and men have their needs. And specifically in regards to women, it is explained that women have they have emotional needs. And here in this particular verse, it's highlighting the emotional need of Diti, who wants to kill Lord Indra. So Kashyapa Muni is now arranging a program for her so that she can fulfill her needs, but at the same time she can actually advance in spiritual life and forget the original need and progress within spiritual practices. The non-devotees don't often do things right. Usually whatever they say and do is for destructive purposes. But sometimes even the non-devotees, they create something or produce something which is of value even to devotees. And I don't know how long ago, must have been about 20 at least 20 years ago, one book came out on the market which has become very, very popular even to this day. And the book is called Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. I don't know if it's been produced in India, but it's very, very popular in the West. And Prabhupada, he told us that sometimes we can take gold from a dirty place, meaning to say that sometimes the non-devotees do produce something which is valuable even to us. So they have studied the psychology of men, and they have studied the psychology of women. And they put together this book, which is very, I would say, quite exact in regards to the makeup and nature of men and women. In fact, I used to use it myself when I was a Grihastha and found it very helpful, because we are different. Men are different than women, and women are different than the men. We cannot deny it. Although the general 21st century idea is that there should be equality and that there's no difference between us, but there is a clear difference. Just like men, they have a sensual need. Women have a emotional need, and men have a sensual need. Men want to resolve problems, come to a conclusion when there's some difficulty, whereas women generally don't need to come to a conclusion, but would prefer to talk with each other and be satisfied, at least from an emotional point of view. But not that they necessarily want to resolve things. An emotional stimulation for them is often enough. Whereas for men, an emotional stimulation is not enough. They want to come to a conclusion, and they will not be happy until there is something concluded and resolved. This is the nature of men. And that's why it is suggested very strongly, even this verse, that the women take shelter of their husband and be guided in a way which is fruitful, practical, fruitful, and spiritually elevating. And Srila Prabhupada was always perceived as being prejudiced against women by saying that they were less intelligent. And their argument for Prabhupada's remark was, why are you discriminating against women and saying that they are less intelligent? Nowadays there are female senators, ambassadors, lawyers, and company directors. So how can you make such a discrimination that women are less intelligent than the men? Of course, this is something from Hari Suri's diary, which he was with Prabhupada at the time, that in 1975, when he made the statement about women being less intelligent, he caused an uproar, we could say. It went to the newspapers, and they didn't like this statement that Prabhupada made. So Hari Suri is mentioning in his diary that in 1975, just after the comment that Prabhupada made that went into the newspapers, there was a TV crew that came to interview Prabhupada because of that statement, which was there in the papers. They came, the crew, every one of the crew members was actually a female. The interviewer was a woman, the camera person was a woman, and all the technical team were women. So they were trying to make a statement that they that they wanted Prabhupada to change his opinion against Prabhupada to change his opinion in regards to women being equal to men. So they again asked Srila Prabhupada, and they challenged him, so do you actually think that women are less intelligent? And Prabhupada said, yes. And they said, why are you discriminating against women? And Prabhupada said, I am not discriminating. Nature has discriminated. Nature has discriminated. And then he said, just like women have babies, men don't have babies. How are you going to change that phenomenon? So how there could be equality? A woman has her purpose in life, and a man has his purpose. But Prabhupada's definition of less intelligence was not in regards to the social setup within society, and in regards especially to work. He said anyone can study to be a politician or a leader or a businessman or lady. That just requires a little bit of education. He said, this is not what I mean when I say less intelligent. And he quotes from the Bhagavad Gita that the Bhagavad Gita defines intelligence, and the definition of intelligence is the ability to discriminate or distinguish from matter and spirit. And this was his point, that that if you want to be intelligent, then you need to decipher or distinguish between matter and spirit. Then you're considered an intelligent person. And therefore, Prabhupada, he also said that in regards to Krishna consciousness, that both the men and the women, they have equal opportunity because they are making this distinction between matter and spirit. That our devotees, whether they're men or women, they have equal opportunity of returning back home, back to Godhead in this lifetime. He was pointing out that from the spiritual point of view, there is no distinction. We are all spirit souls, parts and parcels of Krishna. Only from a social point of view, we must make distinction. From a spiritual point of view, there is no distinction. And there was an interesting, well, Srila Prabhupada affirmed this point several times to some of his women disciples. Yamuna Devi Dasi specifically came one day to Srila Prabhupada and said, Srila Prabhupada, the idea of Krishna consciousness is to go back home, back to Godhead. Is that correct? And Prabhupada said, yes, this is our objective, to go back home, back to Godhead. And she said, but Prabhupada, I'm in a woman's body. How is it possible that we could achieve the same perfection as the men within our society? We are women, they are men. How can we possibly have equal opportunity? And Prabhupada said, there is equal opportunity, providing you do not see yourself as a woman. That now you have come to Krishna consciousness, you're not a woman, but you're a Vaishnavi. You're getting trained in spiritual purification to become a great devotee of Krishna. And therefore, in regards to intelligence within Krishna consciousness, there is no distinction. Not that the men are more intelligent than the women, but there's equal opportunity. There's equal opportunity to develop spiritual intelligence. So this is the point that he was making. There's a difference between material intelligence and spiritual intelligence. Material intelligence, there may be some, you may try for equality, but in as far as practices, social practices, there is unrest because the women are no longer allowed to have babies, they're aborted, and instead they're forced to work in factories or some other employment so that they can demonstrate this point of equality. Also, there was a nice incident. The first Mayapur festival in 1973, Prabhupada invited all his godbrothers. At that time, we had only one building, which was the Lotus building. It had just been completed. And on a morning walk during that festival, Prabhupada stopped and he was very direct at us. He said, "This is my international headquarters." Of course, it was quite difficult for us to perceive or understand what he was saying, that this was his international headquarters, since there was only one building, the Lotus building, and all around that building there was simply paddy fields. So we were looking at each other wondering whether it was something wrong with Srila Prabhupada. Maybe he had some kind of fever or something. But how is it possible this could be the international headquarters of ISKCON? In those days, everything that happened in Los Angeles, then we followed whatever they did, we followed in suit. But of course, Prabhupada was not just looking at the present time, he could see into the future. And now here, today, we have no doubt that Sridhar Mayapur is the international headquarters of ISKCON. But at that time, Prabhupada was very, very enlivened to invite all his godbrothers to the achievement that he had already made in Mayapur, which was that Lotus building. So he invited them and he offered them all a chance to speak, and some of them, they were very positive and encouraging in regards to what Prabhupada was achieving, but others were not supportive at all, because Prabhupada was not making this distinction between the males and the females within our society. That Prabhupada made definite changes within the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition by accepting women within the ashrams, creating Brahmacharini ashrams, and specifically giving women Gayatri Mantra. This was something which was very, very new to the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. And therefore they took this opportunity to criticize Srila Prabhupada. What are you doing changing Bhakti Siddhanta's teachings or his social structure for reform? And anyway, after the program, prasadam was being distributed, And Prabhupada specifically asked Malati Devi Dasi to distribute prasadam to all the sannyasis. And you can imagine the atmosphere suddenly became very intense. And some of the sannyasis really, really did not like being served by Malati Devi Dasi. And they voiced their concern to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, "She will cut her throat for me, and I will cut my throat for her." End of subject matter. He was making a very clear point to his god brothers. She is my disciple, she's a Vaishnavi, and she is going to go back home, back to Godhead in this lifetime, and I am giving her training, and therefore you, as my god brothers, should encourage her, not criticize. So anyway, in this way, Prabhupada made it very clear that equal opportunity was there for his god brothers, women disciples and men disciples. However, in 1976, although we had Prabhupada's clear training and clear guidance in regards to men and women within our society, in 1976 there was a big fight between grihasthas and the sannyasis. It was a very heavy situation because the sannyasis were preaching very heavy against the women. In fact, they were preached to the brahmacharis that when you go out on book distribution, don't give any books to women. Because if you distribute a book to a woman, she may become a devotee. And if she becomes a devotee, you may have to marry her. This was the preaching. One sannyasi came to Prabhupada and he said, "Prabhupada, I'm never going to look at a woman ever again." And Prabhupada looked at him and said, "Where is there such an injunction in the Vedas?" Another sannyasi came to Prabhupada and said, "Prabhupada, from today on, I will not see women as being very beautiful." And Prabhupada looked at him and said, "Is there something wrong with you?" So in this way, there was an attempt in that time, at that time, to bring down the female devotees. That they weren't appreciated. They were tolerated more than appreciated. And they had to go through many, many classes where this point that you women sitting here today, you're less intelligent. And therefore, they were making a clear distinction between men and women. But Prabhupada himself resolved this issue by complying, making it the same point again that in our society there's equal opportunity, that you should not see the women as women because women are walking around in a certain way to advertise their body. But a Vaishnavi is being trained to forget the body and to identify with the eternal spirit soul. I remember when I first joined, also in 1972, in London, For at least 1 year I received training as a brahmachari, and part of that training was that I should not look into the eyes of a woman. That was one specific thing that was indoctrinated in me. Another one was that you should not allow a woman to defeat you. This was number two. But one day I landed myself into some trouble. There was a mind, body and spirit festival which we attend every year in London. They invite us to distribute books and have kirtan on the stage. So we're very much part of the festival, the Mind, Body and Spirit Festival and in Ealing Broadway in London every year. And this particular year, I think it was one of the first times we were invited. And the devotees were on the stage chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and encouraging others to chant too. I was asked at that time to man a book table to sell, distribute some of the books. And at one point, one very beautiful girl came up to me and she pointed to the Bhagavad Gita. She said, "What is this book? Please explain it to me." So I started to explain. Well, the Bhagavad Gita is 5,000 years old, and it's the cream of all the Vedic literature. In the second chapter, Krishna doesn't really waste much time in explaining that we're spirit souls and not this body. And I was going on like this for 15 minutes, circling my head in all directions except looking at her. And then at one point she stopped me. She said, "Wait a minute, you have a problem." I said, "Me?" She said, you have a problem. And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" She said, "Well, you spoke to me here 15 minutes and not once have you looked at me. You have a problem." So she was waiting for my reply. And I realized that I was being defeated here by a woman. And how was I going to get out of being defeated and at the same time not look at her? It was not possible. So for the next 15 minutes I decided, okay, here we go. I looked at her right in her face and eyes and I explained the glories of the Bhagavad Gita. When I finished, she said, "Thank you very much, and how much is the Gita?" And I sold her the Bhagavad Gita. So after that incident, I was wondering whether my training was actually correct or not. Was Krishna trying to explain something to me here? And of course, you know, as we have understood from the statements that Prabhupada made, that there's no such Vedic injunction that you cannot look at a woman when you're preaching to her. It is socially irresponsible and it just does not look naturally, it doesn't look natural. And it's very off-putting to the one that you're preaching to. In Sweden, I got myself into more trouble. This was years later. We had an outdoor festival, and I was the one that was supposed to encourage everyone to chant Hare Krishna and dance. So I decided to make a competition. Okay, I'm going to look for the best chanters and dancers, and when after the kirtan, I will pick three persons who are the best free chanters and dancers, and I will give a prize. So the kirtan was really, really ecstatic, and I had picked my three persons, which I considered were most enthusiastic in this competition. So number three came up to take the prize, number two came up to take the prize, and the best one was again, I was a woman, she was a young girl, and she was so enthusiastic and so happy to be the best dancer, to be the best chanter and dancer, that as she came to receive the prize that I was giving her, she went like this. She wanted to kiss me on the cheek. I had to make a split-second decision here. There were a lot of non-devotees, and there were a lot of devotees. If I allowed it to happen, the devotees, my fellow brahmacharis, they would intimidate me, asking, why did you do that? And if I didn't do it in front of all these non-devotees, they would probably question, why is he so conservative? It's just a natural response from this lady that she wanted to show her appreciation. So I had to make a decision, a split-second decision. And I made a choice. But you don't want to know that, do you? There's no interest for you, right?
Please tell us.
Huh?
Please tell us.
Well, whether it was right or whether it was wrong, I said, okay, go on. And she kissed me on the cheek, and then one brahmachari took a photograph. And he intimidated me for years after. Do you remember this? Anyway, I don't know whether you would do that in India, but you know, in the West, especially in Sweden, you know, you have to think, well, I'm in Sweden and maybe this is probably the best for the Swedish people. So anyway, in that way, the main point is that, you know, eternally we are all spirit souls, Jivair Svarup Hoy Krishna Nitya Das. That our constitutional position is eternal spirit souls, and we must try to revive that eternal constitution. That is our ambition or our goal within Krishna consciousness. The more we're off the physical and mental platform, the more we're on the platform of the heart and the soul. So Prabhupada gave us direction, and we should somehow follow that direction. And in this verse, it is clearly stating that even though Aditi has her emotional constitution, psychology, Kashyapa Muni with his good intelligence is going to give Aditi some instructions, some spiritual practices by which she will then cleanse her heart and become a better devotee. So Rupa Goswami also has given us this instruction that Krishna consciousness means that we accept things which are favorable for Krishna consciousness and we reject those which are unfavorable. So if we can base our whole life on those two principles, then we cannot go wrong. Just one more point which is interesting that I've observed within Krishna consciousness in regards to different practices in devotional service, that men, most of the men seem to achieve their perfection through discrimination, and most of the women in our society seem to be able to achieve their perfection through devotion. To just to give an example, of course I don't know who makes the garlands here in India, but I know that in the West, in all the temples in the West, all garlands are made by the women. And usually the flower arrangements on the altar are also made by the women. If you give me a vase and some flowers, I will probably pick the whole bunch of flowers, throw it in the vase, and say, "Hey Krishna, catch." But if you watch any of the ladies, any of the Vaishnavis arranging the flowers, they're very meticulously placing the flowers within the vase in a very meticulous way, and making sure that the arrangement of the flowers is perfectly done to please Krishna. And this is their ability. What would we do without Vaishnavis within our society? There are so many other services that they do, which generally we men don't have the patience, don't have even the desire to do. So this is how Prabhupada saw with equal vision that Krishna consciousness is going to be spread throughout the world, but not by making any discrimination or distinction from persons to places, but that everyone has a unique quality within them to please Krishna and have an equal opportunity to perfect their life and go back home, back to Godhead. One time in Hyderabad, Prabhupada was giving a class, and after the class, one man stood up, one Indian man stood up. He said, "What about overpopulation?" And of course, Prabhupada generally, he would answer this question that, "Well, I am traveling all over the world, and from my plane window I am seeing so much land which is vacant. So what is the question of overpopulation? The overpopulation is within the cities. You need to go back to rural development." But on this particular occasion, he said something very interesting. He said, "Yes, there is overpopulation. There is overpopulation because no one is going back home, back to Godhead." He said the system is jammed up. There's no upward mobility. The system is jammed up and no one is going back home, back to Godhead. So what do you expect? He said, "But this Krishna consciousness is so special and so unique. It has the ability to change everyone's hearts from a hard-hearted bodily concept to a soft heart and a spiritual concept of life, attain perfection and go back home, back to Godhead. This is Krishna consciousness and everyone is welcomed." Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Chanting 16 rounds every day, ki nitai gaur premanandi.
His Holiness Dear Sananda Das Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki.
So any questions? Huh? Yeah. Questions or comments? No questions, no comments.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj, so much about the Mataji's position. So I also wanted to hear about the unique position of the Mataji's and their Maharaj.
I can't hear what you say.
Their Maharaj. So the unique position is their.
Can you translate what he's saying? Because I don't understand.
So they are mothers.
Whose mothers?
They are mothers for the women's mothers.
Uh-huh.
So that is the very, very unique position. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to express that.
Yeah, in the early days, we used to see all our Brahmacharinis as mothers, and especially the temple president's wife. She would be the supreme mother, and we would really take shelter of her, and she would give us guidance and protection. I remember there was one mother. She saw my long hair. But she also knew that I liked her pineapple bread that she made every day. So she would bribe me every day with her pineapple bread so that she could take a little bit more of my hair. And this was a nice reciprocation. She was not after the whole thing. My hair was down here. She didn't want to shave me completely. But she did it very gently, very gradually, bit by bit every day. And this was the exchange. I would get some bread, pineapple bread, and she would get 1 inch of my hair. And this was a really nice, sweet reciprocation between us. And this was what it was like in those days. A lot of respect between each other. No discrimination. Thank you for that point. Srila Prabhupada Ki.